Shin has his MPH and is the Clinical Program Officer for Partners in Health, where he is responsible for the management of strategy development, implementation, and evaluation of clinic projects across Partners in Health and its sites. And his most prominent project is working with the Zanmi-Lasant partners to support the integration of data-driven and evidence-based mental health services into the primary care systems of 11 joint Haitian Ministry of Health hospitals by providing care to 1.2 million people. So mental health integration into primary care in Haiti. Welcome.
Tell us how to do it here.
Well, that's easy. Thank you very much for having me. So yet again, today I'll be talking about mainly our mental health work in our 11 hospitals in Haiti. I really appreciate, again, the opportunity to do this. I know the first thing I need to say is I have no relationships to disclose or financial obligations. So let's get started. The first thing I want to talk about, just generally with Partners in Health, but particularly with the work that we do in all 11 sites, is our patients drive everything that we do. I know this is sort of a given, but I think it's just an important point generally, particularly in development, that it's important to really realize funding doesn't drive what we do. It really is our mission about social justice and acknowledging that every single person should have the right to healthcare, and that everything that we do from strategy to evaluation to our clinical work is really driven by that idea. The second thing I want to point out, and I do this with every presentation I do, is that when I'm talking about our work, I'm not really talking about sort of me doing the work. I'm talking about our teams in Haiti. So this is sort of a portion of our mental health team in Haiti, our psychologists and social workers. So when I describe all the data, describe all the work that we do, the curriculum development, et cetera, I'm really talking about me and my colleagues at Partners in Health here in Boston working through and in partnership with our team. We have a term, accompaniment, that we talk about Partners in Health, and that really means working side by side with our local field staff, our partners, to really accomplish our common mental health goals, and in this case it's going to be depression. I want to start with the 2010 Haiti earthquake. For Partners in Health, this really was a huge part of our history for a number of different reasons, but particularly for mental health. Before 2010, mental health services were quasi-integrated into our work, but not really formalized. What the 2010 earthquake really brought to the forefront, not only for Partners in Health and Zanmi-Lasant, which is our Partners in Health in Haiti, particularly also the Ministry of Health in Haiti, is that a lot of the acute trauma that we saw that was exacerbated by the massive poverty that we saw in Haiti really brought to the forefront the PTSD, the depression that was already existing there for the 30 plus years that we were there for essentially the entire history of Haiti. But it really provided an opportunity for the Ministry of Health to see in a really, really drastic way how important mental health services were. So they actually reached out to Partners in Health and asked us to help them figure it out. How do we create mental health services in Haiti? Now, the question that's often comes up is, okay, great, mental health services really work in developing or developed settings, but does it really have the capacity to be built in developing settings, or does it really exist? Like, or can it be treated, more importantly? Before I go into our work, I want to talk about Esther, who is in the middle. We found Esther shortly after the 2010 earthquake, wandering the countryside. She was catatonic, she was hearing voices. Generally speaking, she wasn't doing very well. Through an integrated approach, Tatiana, who is to her right, diagnosed her correctly with longstanding depression, and through social assistance, psychological support, and psychiatric treatment, and those three things are really important because they go hand in hand together. You know, Esther was able to go from the catatonic state that she was and the depressed state that she was into the smiling woman that you see in front of you. The main point I want to make here is that, A, mental health issues do exist. Depression does exist in low resource settings, particularly in Haiti. And B, that it actually can be safely and effectively treated. So as I said, the main point of this talk and what we're trying to do now is integrate mental health services into the primary care system of our co-run Zanmi-Lasant government of Haiti hospitals. These are all three, primary, secondary, and tertiary care hospitals. The majority of them are hospitals or health centers, just differing in size. It covers 1.2 million people in the Central Plateau and Artimonite region. And this is just a map of our catchment area. So before we even go into treating depression, what do we mean by depression? A lot of debate goes around as to this westernized concept of what depression looks like. And so when we classically look at depression, we think of depressed mood, feelings of guilt or low self-worth, loss of pleasure, interest of pleasure, decreased energy, disturbed sleep or appetite, poor concentration. This is how we contextualize mental health by things like the DSM-4, DSM-5 here in the United States, in Europe, but does that actually make sense in Haiti or Rwanda or any of the other places that we work? So the answer is sort of. Back in 2010, 2011, during the Haiti earthquake, we acknowledged that we can't accurately and appropriately treat depression unless we actually know what it looks like. And so we ended up doing a qualitative study. It was a 100-item card sort that had a number of things that related to Haitian idioms, things from things like the PHQ-9 or the Harvard Trauma Questionnaire, just a lot of really great data that, as of right now, shows us what depression looks like in various different places, but then asking Haitian physicians, Haitian nurses, Haitian psychologists, Haitian social workers, Haitian caregivers, people in the community, local traditional healers, ungas, and also international mental health experts to say, okay, what does depression actually look like? And based off of the 90 cards that we came up with, 13 items, and these are the items that, across the board, there was a unanimous decision that this is what depression looks like. The interesting thing about the Zamy-Lasante Depression Symptom Inventory, or ZLDSI, is that only the first three items are unique Haitian idioms. The rest of the items actually come from something called the Patient Health Questionnaire 9, the PHQ-9, which is used to diagnose depression here in the United States. The interesting thing here, stepping away from Haiti for a second, is that we see very similar we see something very similar both in Rwanda and Mexico, where we also have mental health services being run, and when we screen for depression, is that across the board generally, we actually start to see similarities across cultures of what depression is diagnosable as. So moving more into the system, so how do we start to look at how we start to teach depression, and how do we start to look at the various roles within our community-based approach, within the not only the hospitals that we have, not only primary and secondary tertiary hospitals that we have, but also within the community, because we know some of the most vulnerable populations that we have are out in rural areas that are not going to be able to make it to our hospitals and health centers without any sort of social assistance or aid or transportation or whatnot. When we looked at how to appropriately treat depression, we identified five key areas which are outlined here in what we call the 5x5 model. It looks at case finding, engagement, monitoring and psychoeducation, targeted psychosocial interventions, drug management, supervision and consultation, and then overview and quality. As you can see, we sort of tactic fit this out, and the next slide we'll go into it a little bit more, of who exactly has these roles, who exactly is responsible for these tasks. We look at CHWs, community health workers, nurses, psychologists, social workers, physicians, those are mainly general practitioners, because there's less, I can count on one hand how many psychiatrists that we have in Haiti, and two of them are ours, clinical supervisors, and quality improvement. One note I want to make here, which alludes to the previous presentation I was just giving, is that quality improvement is really important. Training's not enough. The supervision isn't really enough. We really need to make sure that what we're doing is safe, what we're doing is effective, and that we're actually setting benchmarks and baselines to meet standards. If we're not doing that, then we're probably not doing a good job, and we know that. So we look at, okay, specifically, what does everyone do? How do we really define roles and, frankly, tash things around? Traditionally, in our system originally, everyone just gave all the mental health patients to psychologists, social workers, and said, deal with it. That has to do with stigma, we'll talk about a little bit earlier. We're starting in the community, and we're looking at community health workers. And we identified that the community health workers really do baseline screening and early stage psychological interventions, because based off of what their education is and based on what they need them to do in the system, this is the most appropriate for them. So community health workers, they identify, screen, refer moderate to severe cases of depression, and also look for risk factors to refer. If a person has a moderate to a mild level of depression, through a lot of anecdotal work that we've done so far, we've acknowledged that they can do sort of simple baseline early stage interpersonal therapy work, for example, or to do psychoeducation, or to give hope. But if someone that is in a mental health crisis is suicidal, we acknowledge that they do not have the skill sets to be able to do that, so they must refer up to the health centers and hospitals with the psychologists and social workers are. Psychologists and social workers have a higher level of education, have more clinical understanding of what depression looks like. And we'll use the ZLDSI to screen, again, assess for suicidality, a danger to others, mental health crises, provide more advanced interpersonal therapy, which they are trained on, and refer to physicians in cases of medical need or really extreme cases where the patient actually won't respond to psychological interventions. Nurses provide probably more care in the world than I've ever seen. I've worked in Lesotho, Mexico, Haiti, Rwanda. In Haiti, they provide about 85% to 90% of the care in our health system, and I would say across the board in Haiti, we see that as well. So they're really the first line defense when someone comes into a health center and they're not coming from community and they're not going to the psychologist and social worker, that they're actually just going straight into the primary care system. Nurses originally have this really large stigma against mental health patients, particularly when you see like a psychotic patient, an epileptic patient. If you don't know what epilepsy or psychosis looks like, if you haven't had the medical training to see that, a lot of the traditional beliefs tend to take over in the central plateau and are too beneath. So it's really important that generally we are able to help the nurses understand what depression looks like, that it's treatable, that's an illness, and appropriately who to refer to. And then physicians, usually we want them to not be so overburdened because they have such a huge patient load across the board that we want only severe cases of depression to get to the physicians who are trained in psychopharmacology now and appropriately treating with medications and making appropriate referrals back to the psychologists. This sort of says in a nutshell what I just described. This depression care pathway just talks about if you start at the left, that's where we're really starting in the community where we find the patient, and then moving all the way to the right where we are in the hospitals. And the important thing to note here is that you'll see scores, and those scores are actually the ZLDSI scores. And the reason why creating the ZLDSI was important, the reason why it was important to contextualize depression in a local Haitian setting and context was because that score actually drives what happens to the patient. That score allows us to understand whether a patient should appropriately get psychoeducation, if they should get advanced interpersonal therapy, or if they should actually be referred to a psychiatrist or, apologies, a general practitioner for medication treatment. The other second point I'll mention here is the follow-up. Once a patient goes through, it's not just enough to say, okay, we'll see you later, great, you're treated. We know that depression is chronic. We know that from anecdotal evidence. We know that just across the board knowing things about depression. And it's really important that the community health workers, because when a patient goes back to the community, there's a high likelihood that they will drop out if they're not actually followed up with for numerous number of reasons. It might be side effects from the medications they're having, and maybe that they're getting worse, and maybe that, you know, frankly, that they're chained up inside their house. We see multiple cases of that. And the community health workers are such an integral piece of our community-based approach so that we can actually go out and ensure that the patients are safe, that they're improving, or if they're not improving, that they're receiving the care that they need. This is an example of one of our more sort of detailed community health worker patient encounter forms. It's something that we're piloting now, and I think the general thing that we're seeing is that it's too complicated. I think for setting up the context and for as a teaching tool, it's helpful, but for actually being used as a tool that a community health worker goes through, we're working more towards sort of a tool Gawande-like checklist approach. But this is actually a really helpful tool for our supervisors to actually see and check through what community health workers are and aren't doing. Are they adhering to the clinical standard? Because this essentially outlines what we see clinical standards for community health workers as within their role. And this allows the supervisors to very easily say, okay, where are the gaps that we see and what they're doing and how do we improve those? So I guess the most important question, so we talked about all these skills, we talked about all these roles. How are these skills acquired, evaluated, and sustained? They're acquired through formal trainings led by our GCC clinical supervisors. Those are Haitian psychologists, Haitian physicians, Haitian nurses, and Haitian community health worker leaders that are leading these approaches. And it's important that they're leading them because they're the ones who will actually go up to sort of the sustain and follow up with them. We're talking about trainings held in the community. Again, it's not enough just to bring people out into a training center. We have a network of over 5,000 community health workers. We need to ensure that we're actually bringing not only the treatment to them, but also bringing the skills and training out to them in the community. And curriculum development that is very similar to how we created ZLDSI and is a multi-sectoral, interrelated approach that involves experts not only here in the United States, but a lot of our colleagues in Haiti. We evaluate them through sort of four main things that you'll see there, but again, the main point is that we have various ways to capture data and then be able to organize it and feed it back into the clinical supervisors on a monthly basis so that they know how all the people that are trained are doing and how to know that they are improving. And then finally, sustained. There's four things here. There are two things that I will say are the supervision. Supervision is probably the most important part of everything that we do. Without supervision, training is essentially pointless and useless. Without supervision, the data doesn't really get used for quality improvement. Actually, I'll just say one thing on that because I know I'm running out of time. I just wanted to show this because just to explain it's complicated. We're essentially an NGO trying to run a government health system, 11 hospitals, and trying to interrelate within within a health idea that's largely been vertical. Mental health has always been sort of separated from the primary care system. Even here in the United States, it tends to not have the greatest of integrations into primary care. And this is important because we're ensuring that not only is the mental health team involved, but the training team in Zombie Asante is involved, that the quality improvement team is involved, that the clinical leadership in Zombie Asante is involved. Generally, what we see, again, is that it's very difficult for people to understand that mental health is an issue, oftentimes, sometimes within our own organization. And so this integrated approach actually essentially sort of forces, but not forces in a really strategic way, for people to acknowledge that mental health is an issue, that it can be treated, and that everyone has a really equal part in that. Alluding to stigma reduction, I mentioned we often see people chained up in the community. I think that's sort of understandable to a degree, understanding when you see epilepsy and you don't actually know what it is, and integrating traditional approaches, it's very hard to understand that. The second point is actually probably more interesting. The stigma really exists in our health system as well, within our nurses and our physicians, because they haven't had a lot of training in mental health and psychiatry and psychological approaches to acknowledge that depression is a thing that's very much tied to HIV and tuberculosis and cancer and all the other things that they treat on a daily basis. And a really large part of our approach is also the stigma reduction of our own staff and helping them understand that mental health is an issue and that it can be treated and it should be treated. We are doing an mHealth pilot, which is nice. It's interesting and involves technological innovation, but I just wanted to make a quick word about innovation. When we think about innovation, we think about things like this, like mHealth pilots, things that use really fancy technologies, that use new drugs or whatnot. But, you know, sometimes, and, you know, what I described, most of what we're doing is pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward. And for me and for a lot of our work, sometimes innovation is just doing something very simple, something that's done here in the United States really well, and then making it happen in a place like Haiti. And so just sort of recontextualizing what we think of innovation. And then the importance of advocacy. I know I got a question earlier that how are you funding all of this? Where is all this money coming from? And it's a really exciting time for Global Mental Health because for the first time, a bilateral organization, Grand Challenges Canada, just gave out $19.4 million last September and has actually given out another tranche recently for Global Mental Health projects around the globe. And Zombie Asante and Partners in Health, we were lucky enough to receive $1.5 million over the next 3 years. We just finished our first year focusing on depression. We'll be focusing on epilepsy, bipolar disorder, psychosis, and child and adolescent disorders in years 2 and 3. But this sort of money is unheard of in global mental health and really the history of global health generally. So we're very excited and very fortunate to be receiving these types of funds, but it really alludes to, okay, what happens after year 3, after the money's gone? And so that's why we have a really large part where advocacy to the local ministries of health and also to our local bilateral organizations, foundations, et cetera, to ensure that after the 3 years are done, that we have the ability to sustain financially a lot of the work and capacity building that we've done. And with that, I say thank you.
So there are not a lot of time left for questions for Shin, but any quick clarifications before we move on, and then we'll have our conversation at the end. Dr. Luboga?
They are not. They're general nurses. Most of them are auxiliary nurses. In Rwanda, we do have psychiatric nurses that are the equivalent of psychiatric nurse practitioners here because they can actually prescribe medications. Our GCC nurse supervisor is a specialized psychiatric nurse, and he's actually, I think, the first psychiatric nurse in Haiti ever. But all the nurses are, no, just general nurses.
Question back there. Can you explain a little bit more about your
Yes. So generally what we're looking at, so we did an mHealth pilot with cholera during the cholera epidemic and sort of is continually ongoing. The general idea is that we have mobile handholds that will act as a decision support tool for our community health workers. And so the patient encounter form that you saw earlier for the community health workers, we're trying to figure out with our developers how to essentially like integrate that in a helpful way to help community health workers make better decisions, screen better, and make more appropriate referrals.